Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who, like me, have come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, even counterproductive. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to engage in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, toll-free 877-300-7645. In an interview with Fox News, General Mark Welsh, the head of the United States Air Force, warned that severe defense budget cuts will impact U.S. air superiority against enemies that the nation may not be thinking about right now. Severe defense cuts. You know, we spend almost $700 billion a year on our war-making capability. And we spend even more money when we deploy our belligerence to invade or to bomb countries. We're the biggest military on earth. If you combine the United States military budget with its spy budget, which is run by the military, we outspend the rest of the world combined. And this moron is complaining that even though we outspend the rest of the world combined, should you take some of his money away, that there's going to be enemies that we don't even know of today that are going to be out to get us. I want to tell you, if we don't know who these potential enemies are today that would attack and invade the United States, that would have a reason to attack and invade the United States, would have the capability of attacking and invading the United States, they don't exist, and they're not going to exist in 50 years. This idiot then went on to speak of China and Russia are two good examples of enemies. How is China an enemy? I mean, I ask you this question. How is China an enemy? How warped does your perspective of the world have to be to view China or Russia as enemies? In the case of China, we are by far their largest customer. I know it's a strange world out there, but most people who sell things do not view their customers as their enemies. Most people who make things and who sell things look at their customers as their single most valued asset. Those that they would treat with the highest possible esteem. Those they would attempt to serve. No country, no company has ever succeeded that views their customers as their adversary. China is the world's largest manufacturing country. By far larger in manufacturing goods and services than the United States. And the United States is the largest customer of the country that makes the most products. And yet this idiot is so stupid, he wants us to believe that China is out there deciding that, you know, if we were to completely destroy the United States, if we were to invade it, and we were to change our modus operandi, and rather than investing in industry for the betterment of our people, we were to spend a disproportionate amount of our treasury building weapons for the express purpose of invading and occupying the United States so as to eliminate our largest customer and so as to bankrupt our largest customer, that would really be in the interest of our people. I mean, how in the world does somebody come up with this stupidity? Do they have to create illusionary enemies? You look at Russia. When did Russia invade the United States? When did Russia ever have a reason to invade the United States? Russia is the largest country in terms of landmass, maybe China's second largest. If there ever was a country that has untapped reserves, a de minimis population compared to the landmass that it occupies. And this landmass isn't impoverished. It's second only to China in terms of rare earth elements. It's way past China, amongst the wealthiest in the world when it comes to the de facto currency today, which is oil and gas. They have no incentive and will never have an incentive to invade America. None, ever. So what do we care? Why is Russia and China, why are Russia and China good examples of enemies, of countries who would be fielding a capability in the next 3 to 5 years if they stay on track that is better than what we have in many areas, Welch said during a 3-day visit to Langley Air Force Base in Virginia. You know, I witnessed the attempt the Chinese have made to field a stealth fighter. They decided that they would build their own engine for it. That gun thing barely flew. It was all it could do without any armaments, without any missiles, with its tanks essentially empty on fuel, as light as it could possibly be. It was about all it could do to stay airborne. You know, the more they spend on such things, the less effective China will be in all other areas. They have one aircraft carrier, and it's not even functional yet. And that one aircraft carrier was made by the Russians. It's an old Russian ship that the Russians could no longer afford to complete, so they gave the hull to the Chinese. I mean, good grief. This is not a threat, not militarily. The Russians aren't a threat, not militarily. I mean, you have to have been victim of patriotic indoctrination to view the world in such stupid, ignorant, obviously untrue perspectives. Now, he would go on to say that fighter aircraft in the next 3 to 5 years that have more capacity than we have are currently sitting on the ramp. He says the F-35 will stay a generation ahead of them. The F-22 will as well. The F-35 is an absolute disaster. It's a plane without a purpose, without a function, without any reason to be. It's a camel. It's an airplane designed by committee. It doesn't do anything well. And, you know, here you have the F-22, which he says will stay a generation ahead of its opponents. So if it's a generation ahead, how are they going to catch up? Are they going to catch up with the F-15? That's his implication. So what if they do? The F-15 was designed, 50 years ago, 40 years ago. Why do we care? I know I made a point the other day. I said, what's the purpose of fighters? What can you achieve today with a fighter? Oh, well, we're using them to bomb the Islamic State in Syria. Yeah, and in the process, we're empowering and enriching and increasing the size, the capacity, the popularity of the Islamic State. Ever since we declared war with them, against them, with our fighters, they have grown exponentially. In fact, declaring war on them and using our fighters to bomb them has been counterproductive. So who else are we going to engage fighters against? He says, you know, but 10 years from now, we could be facing as many as 50 countries who use Russian and Chinese top-end fighters today. So what, are we going to go to war with whom? Are we going to go to war with Syria? I mean, Syria can barely keep at bay, at least out of Damascus, and they've lost the rest of the country to the Islamic State. But they can barely protect Damascus. Project a force? Forget it. Who are we going to go to war with? Yemen? Saudi Arabia? They hate us, but no, they're equipped with American weapons. Kuwait? Who are we going to go to war with? Brazil? Chile, Argentina, Cuba? I mean, which of these 50 countries that use Russian weapons now is the United States going to be in an armed conflict with? Who? You tell me, what country out there has the capacity or will to invade the United States and could do so? There isn't any. There hasn't been any. There won't be any. Our Department of Defense is a complete waste of money. It doesn't protect American freedoms. It has never fought to protect American freedoms. It's all propaganda. It's all a myth to get you to sacrifice your money, your freedoms. Your very essence in terms of what you know, what you think, to sacrifice your perspective so that it becomes the same as those who wish to control you because they have all of the guns, because you cannot rebel against them. Now, the reality is the place that America is investing, the place that the reason that we're not currently building bazillions of F-35s is because we're spending a disproportionate amount of our money on drones. We have the world's largest drone fleet. We have the world's most sophisticated drone fleet. We're flying drones. And it's something that this general acknowledged. He says, you know, we're flying so many drone missions that we can't recruit nor retain the pilots. We're working those poor pilots 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. And they're quitting faster than we can recruit and train new ones. Why are they quitting? You know, when you join the military, you just can't quit. Unless you've got a really, really good reason, like this is driving me insane. Like, if I have to continue here, I might bomb the general who is making me do this. You know, the reality is that drones are like video games with one exception. They're real. The people who are killed are forever dead. There is no rebooting. There's no, let's play the game over. You're dead. And it's remote control war that America is in position to fight. No, we're going to kill people that we want to kill, when we want to kill them, where we want to kill them. And we're the best at it. The intelligence, which is gathered by Predator and Reaper pilots, which are also killers, by the way, who are all sitting in a desert outside Las Vegas at the Creech Air Force Base, are striking targets around the world. The Air Force, however, has been losing more drone pilots than they can train, which has General Welsh concerned, and which has forced him to order a stop loss. You know what that means, a stop loss? It means two things. One is that you have absolutely no rights when you're in the U.S. military. This myth that the U.S. military is responsible for our freedom is absolutely torn asunder by the fact that it is the least free organization on earth. Even if you have an agreement, you go into the U.S. military and say, you know, I'll give you 3 years. I'll give you 5 years. I commit to turn over total and complete control of my life where I have absolutely no free will for the next 3 to 5 years. And then with stop loss, an idiot like this general can say, yeah, that was the deal we made, but we're not going to honor it. Down there in the far, the small print, what it really says is that you have no freedom for the rest of your life. We can call you back at any time. And if you don't come back and do whatever we tell you to do, we'll incarcerate you. We'll take away what little freedom that you thought you actually had. Stop loss means that your tour of duty does not end your tour. It means that just because you don't like killing people for no reason around the world, that you can't say, I don't want to do it anymore. It means that when you want to leave the military, you can't leave. That even if you've left the military after your tour of duty is over, they can call you right back. Bush used stop loss when he invaded Iraq and of those being killed in Iraq, a disproportionate number were those who were in their 40s, late 30s, in their early 40s, who had careers, who had lives, who had families, who had left the military and were drawn back in on order of the president. Stop loss. It means you have no freedom. There's also no intelligence. Outgoing Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Martin Dempsey admits in an interview that the U.S. military had done no contingency planning to prepare for the fall of Mosul when Islamic terrorists swept into Iraq's second largest city last June and seized control. Well, no, there were not, Dempsey replies in an interview with Frontline's Martin Smith when asked if there were any contingency plans inside the Pentagon for how to respond if Mosul were to fall to the terrorists from the Islamic State. Quote, so look, there were several things that surprised us about ISIL. Yeah, one of the fact is that you can't use the name ISIL unless you're a nincompoop. It's the Islamic State, full stop. If you wanted to use their name during a brief period, they were the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. But Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant doesn't make any sense. They're not in most of the Levant countries. Now, beyond all of that, prior to that time, for the most of their existence, they were the Islamic State in Iraq. Simply, the Islamic State in Iraq. Nothing more, nothing less. Although, to be confusing, when they were the Islamic State in Iraq, they were called Al-Qaeda. But that's a problem since Al-Qaeda didn't exist in Iraq. But such is the problem with names in America. So, look, several things surprised us about ISIL. Boy, that's his favorite thing. The degree which they were able to form their own coalition, both inside of Syria and inside of the northwestern Iraq, the military capability that they exhibited, the collapse of the Iraq security forces. Yes, in those initial days, there were a few surprises. I've never heard an American politician or an American military officer tell us the truth. The coalition that the Islamic State formed when they were the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria to become the Islamic State, to capture Mosul, is a direct result of Petraeus' and Bush's awakening program, the Surge. Yes, Governor McClown of Arizona was trumpeting the great success of the Surge the other day and says the Surge prevailed, we won, and then Obama pulled the troops out and we're losing now. No, the Surge is what caused and created the Islamic States. Yes, Dempsey said, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, we were surprised about the degree they were able to form their own coalition. He doesn't want to say what that coalition is. He knows. The coalition is between the Islamic State in Iraq, which was al-Baghdadi's religious organization, and the Awakening Program, the Surge, as constructed by George Bush, Senator John McClown, and General Petraeus, as I like to call him, General Betrayus. They came up with this idea that while we increased American troop strength, American troops would just hunker on down in the bases. What we would do is we would deploy, not only build the army of Iraq, which was an all-Shiite army that is wholly loyal to Tehran, which is the problem here because they menaced the Sunnis, which created this civil war. But at the same time, because we were arming the Shias, and we knew that they were going to use those arms to bludgeon the Sunnis, we gave the Sunnis and the tribal leaders of the Sunnis weapons. and we gave them tons of weapons. That was part of what was called the Awakening Program. And General Petraeus said, we're giving them these weapons for them to fight al-Qaeda. Now, there was no al-Qaeda in Iraq. And the only thing that could even be associated with al-Qaeda, and they were actually in opposition to al-Qaeda. They've been denounced by al-Qaeda. They've never been part of al-Qaeda. By al-Qaeda's own admission, was the Islamic State. And so they were supposed to use, these Sunnis were supposed to use these weapons to kill other Sunnis, not defend themselves against the Shia. But the Shia became so belligerent with American weapons, bombarding Sunni communities, bombing Sunni communities, that the generals that were part of Saddam Hussein's army, the government leaders that were part of Iraq prior to the American invasion, who were the tribal leaders that we funneled the weapons through to create a Sunni militia, they said, you know, the only way to defend ourselves against this onslaught of the Shias deploying American weapons against our people is to band together. And so the Islamic State became expert at military tactics, expert in governance, expert in how to deploy advanced weaponry the moment that coalition occurred. And it was one that was destined to happen because, as I said 1,000 times, there was no chance that the Sunnis were going to use those weapons against other Sunnis when they were obviously going to use them to defend themselves against the attacks of the Shia. And so we created this alliance. Why would it surprise us? And why would it surprise us that that alliance would take over Mosul? He then goes on to say, Dempsey's frank, well, this article says, Dempsey's frank comments, he's not frank, he's skirting all around the issue, would appear to raise fresh questions about the performance of U.S. intelligence agencies in tracking the rise of the Islamic State, as well as the state of planning inside the Obama administration as it continues to grapple with a war against the Islamic State terrorists. One of the things that I have not said in some time, but probably said 1,000 times on this program, the United States has absolutely no intelligence when it comes to fundamentalist Islam. The NSA and the CIA won't even talk in terms of Islamic influences around the world or the Mujahideen or jihadists. To discuss Islamic terrorism with a focus on Islam is just not allowed. You would lose your job if you spoke of terrorism as Islamic. And the CIA has no operatives, no actual CIA personnel embedded in any Islamic terrorist organization. None. So we rely entirely on a method of surveillance, which is intercepting telephone conversations and internet communications, that the Islamic terrorists no longer use. They haven't used these since before 9/11 because the United States made it clear that we were intercepting both the email and telephone communications. So they don't even use that means of communication. And we have no operatives embedded in any Islamic organization. The best that we do, and it's horrible, is we bribe known Islamic terrorists to be double agents. But they take our money, they give our money to the organization that they're being hired to spy upon, and all they do is provide false data to the United States. So we're clueless. We haven't any understanding. And since there's no association between Islamic terrorism and the Quran and Hadith, U.S. intelligence efforts are not only a waste of time, they are counterproductive. And so the Islamic State is doing exactly what I predicted they would do. Did exactly what Yahweh predicted they would do thousands of years ago. I don't know why it's a surprise to anybody. It was obvious. All you have to do is read Yahweh's prophecies and read the Quran and Hadith, and you'll know exactly what they're going to do. John McGuire, a former CIA officer in Iraq, called Dempsey's remarks stunning and describes his admission of the failure to do any planning as comparable to the intelligence failures prior to the 9/11 attacks. Well, the fact of the matter is that with the 9/11 attacks, we created our own enemy. We not only created our enemy and caused them to rebel against us through our duplicity, but beyond that, the CIA and the FBI, as well as anybody that was interested and could read, knew exactly what Muslims were planning to do. Ramzi Youssef, the gentleman who was convicted of the first bombing of the World Trade Center, that was through a van bomb, a truck bomb, in the parking basement of the World Trade Center. Ramzi Youssef, in the Philippines, conceived the plot that was later deployed for the second bombing of the World Trade Center. On his computers, which the Philippine government seized and shared with American authorities, was the plan that became 9/11. Ramzi Youssef was not a member of Al-Qaeda. He was a member of Abu Sayyaf, which was the Philippine fundamentalist Islamic organization. And he described the targets. He described the training. He described the flight plans. He described the consequence. Every aspect of it was described in documents that were released to the United States. But because the United States doesn't make the connection between Islam, we never publicized that connection, never acknowledged that connection. So that is the failure of September 11th. He noted that the Islamic State terrorists had been on the march inside of Iraq months before Mosul was attacked, and the United States had already, and that the Islamic State had already seized huge swaths of territory, including the city of Fallujah, the previous January. Yeah, you know, they seized Fallujah in what just depicted what was to come. That Fallujah was the city most aggressively bombarded by the Iraqi government using American weapons. And America didn't seem to care that the Iraqi military, the one that we're rearming and retraining now, was using those weapons to mass murder Sunni Muslims. And so it was in Fallujah that this alliance between the Islamic State and the Awakening Program was formed to defend Sunnis against Shia. That's the reason why there is no chance of reversing these issues, because the Sunnis in those communities know that should the Sunnis regain control, they'll murder them. And so in the majority Sunni communities throughout Iraq and Syria, and keep in mind that throughout the Middle East, 80% of Muslims are Sunni, there is no chance that the Islamic State is going to be repulsed, not for any length of time. There is no chance that the Shiite government is going to retain control. There is no chance that you're going to have a civilized government and a country living in peace. So this is the John McGuire, the former CIA officer. Good Lord, he should resign. Well, the Lord's not good. And he was already resigning, McGuire said when he read a transcript of Dempsey's comments on the frontline show Obama at War. The highest-ranking military officer in the country is surprised by an issue that's been percolating for over a year, said McGuire, who now serves as an advisor to the Kurdish forces battling the Islamic State. That's breathtaking. Where in the hell is the Central Intelligence Agencies? We've got a $75 billion intelligence budget. There is no excuse for this. You know, you don't need a $75 billion intelligence budget. You know what my intelligence budget is? Zero. I predicted all of this. Not only did I predict all of it, I explained all of it. I explained cause and effect. I explained what was going to happen before we invaded the country. It wasn't hard. It's easy. All you got to do is know where to look. You know, but if your mind is already prejudiced, if you've already been so indoctrinated with patriotism and militarism and politics that you can't see beyond your nose, if you've been so jaundiced with political correctness that you can't even exercise good judgment, then I suppose $75 billion is inadequate. But if you freed yourself from political correctness, if you can exercise good judgment, if you're willing to go where the truth leads, if you view the world from the proper perspective, if you're diligent in your research and rational in your connections, all of this was absolutely predictable. There were, I think, four items in the news yesterday that all affirm that Yosha's testimony and the Olivet discourse about what the world would endure as birth pangs prior to his return was accurate. Briefly, these are that at least 13 people were killed by a massive tornado that hit the northern Mexico border city of Ciudad Acuña. At the same time, the world is still trying to react to the series of 7.8 magnitude earthquakes that were so devastating in Nepal. Society. So as most of you know, in Nepal, 8,000 people died as a result of the earthquake and its aftershocks. And then the last few days, Texas, which had been suffering from a horrible drought until this past year and has been deluged with rain. All of a sudden now in Texas, there's so much rain that people are dying. In fact, there's three people that are known dead, I think, in Texas as a result of the floods, and 12 people that are missing and presumed dead. So the kind of weather phenomenon and earthquake activity that Yosha predicted prior to his return is happening before our eyes. Hi, Glenn. Good morning.
Good morning, Adam. Yeah, I just found out from some family members last night that one of my, you know, siblings knows someone who knows the people who are missing. You know, it's like one of those how many, you know, separation things, you know.
Right.
So it's like you're
missing. Yeah, it's really a sad situation. Is that 12 of them, I guess their house was just, they were trying to hunker down in their house as if the house could provide protection from rising waters.
My parents, I said, you know, why in the world? Like, people drive into the fast moving. It says, you know, there'll be a sign that says, don't drive over a bridge if, you know, there's water flowing over it, you know.
Right.
And then people think, like, my car is metal. Metal is heavy and strong and stronger than water. So I'll drive my heavy metal car through these, you know, soft, pliable water.
Dumb.
They don't understand anything about hydraulics.
No, really dumb. You know, the sad thing about all that is that none of that needed to happen. You know, Yahweh uses water throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms to describe that which is man cannot resist. So, for example, the Islamic terrorist raids of Israel following the divestiture of the West Bank when we achieve peace in our time with Israel. He describes them using floodwater terms four or five times because
right. You
can't defend yourself against a flood.
Well, large masses of people are commonly referred to as the sound of many waters. You know, you have,
right.
You know, but I mean, I kind of felt that, but the first thing I thought was there had to be a point at which it became apparent that this was moving way too quickly. You get in, you know, you get in the car and you go. You know?
High ground.
Just go. Head for high ground. And it's the same thing, you know, like with the tsunamis. The elephants are heading for the hills and the humans are going down to the beach to watch the water recede. And it's like, oh, no, don't do that. But anyway, my heart does go out to them and it's a shame. I just, one woman called on her cell phone from the floating house.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, you know that Obama made a speech yesterday to the U.S. Coast Guard. And in his speech yesterday, he said that, you know, violent extremism is a real problem. He won't call that Islamic terrorism. But the biggest problem isn't violent extremism. It isn't Islamic terrorism. The greatest threat to American security, he said, and I'm speaking to you now as the commander-in-chief, is global warming. Then he went into this lecture and said, you know, there's more carbon in the atmosphere now than there was, has been in 800,000 years. He does want to mention that 800,000 years ago, there's actually more carbon in the atmosphere than there is today. He doesn't, of course, want to say that the last 17 years there has been no global warming. And he says, you know, the ocean that you've come to love is going to rise and it's going to swallow up civilizations. He doesn't want to say that the last 3 years the ice pack has grown appreciably, and that frozen waters have expanded so that rather than the water rising, it's falling. But, you know, the truth never got in the way of the president's speech.
Well, it's also true that, right, the global warming is false, and the allegation, that the assertion that he is commander-in-chief is also false, because he's not commander-in-chief unless there's a pending declaration of war. You know, he signed declaration of war. Not a state of emergency, whatever. He, you know, the commander-in-chief of the United States military is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, unless and until a declaration of war is issued. Check your constitution. Hmm.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay, so so the president is not commander-in-chief unless there's a declaration of war, and since there's been no declaration of war in some time, they've served and not been commander-in-chief.
Harry Truman was the last president who was actually commander-in-chief of the military.
Well, yes, because Korea was not a war, and Vietnam, 60,000 Americans died in a police action. And, of course, the invasion of Iraq was not a war. It was shock and awe. It was Operation Enduring Freedom. Yeah, that worked out really well. What, the freedom to be terrorists? The Afghanistan invasion? Oh, I'm sure it had some glorious title, too, but it wasn't a war.